What's up, world? This is Jesse Rich with Jesse Rich Podcast, and I absolutely want to say good morning to you Friday drivers, and also I'm sorry, Friday drivers. I know that a lot of y'all might be listening in. Excuse me one sec. I know y'all might be listening in because I told you all that Friday was kind of a fun podcast, but with a recent event that just happened, I think it's something I need to go over. Goodness, I got the hiccups. I'm so sorry. Let me clear those. All right, with some of the recent events that just happened. So, first and foremost, I do want to tell anyone that is listening to, or I mean, that watches my Twitch, I am so sorry I haven't been on the last couple of days. I have been stuck at work, and it's been crazy, and I got to go in early again tomorrow, so I have not had time to stream. I am so sorry. All right, push that aside. What we're going to go over today is some of the touchy subjects that I found here. I'm going to read these little things, throw my comments in there, blah, blah, blah. But what I really want to talk about is some of the stuff that's happening over in Minneapolis and that situation. Now, I'm not from that area, so I am not attacking the community or the people there or going for the community or the people there. I am just speaking from an outside point of view, and I'm going to use this as a broad spectrum of how I see people if I do reach an opinion. I ain't going to lie. I do not want to throw my opinion out there and just make a whole bunch of people mad and just push my audience away. But at the same time, I told you all from the very beginning, I'm going to keep this raw. I'm going to keep this real. And I'm going to talk to you guys. That's what I'm here for. So with that being said, we're going to go over some of the touchy subject stuff, talking about the Minneapolis police, the four officers being fired. Let's see here. This one says, we must restore the peace. We'll talk about that. So, I like I said, I have just a couple articles here, a couple things that I wanted to go over. And then I want to voice my opinion in between or voice some comments here and there. I actually just had a 45-minute discussion about this while trying to leave work with a coworker, that boy Kaiser you all met. I had about a 45-minute conversation with him and how we both seen different things. So, and how we came to a conclusion on certain things as well. So, like I said, if you are really interested in listening to this type of subject and you want to hear my opinions and you want to talk about this touchy subject of race, stay tuned. All right, so I was talking about the touchy subject of race. The reason I ended on that is because that's what we're going to hit first. Alexia Campbell interviewed someone named Reverend Turner. I believe his full name was Reverend Sylvester T. Turner or something like that. Anyways, I just had a couple questions and answers on here that I thought was pretty interesting. One, she asked him, racism is such a touchy subject. How do you get people to talk about it? And he quoted, it's quite interesting, and there have been a couple different approaches that we have taken. The first approach that we took was assembling people together, presenting the issue, and we did that through a community lunch. From there, we asked willing individuals to participate in some dialogues around this issue, and we ended up probably close to 200. We called them six-part dialogues, and they last 6 weeks. And it sort of grew from there. She also asked him, why is it such a taboo for people to talk about race? Do you think? He said, well, I think there are a number of reasons. One is most people don't know how to talk about it. The other thing is people are ignorant to the systematic nature of it. Another reason is the privilege that has come with the byproduct of it, that I don't have to talk about it. A major reason is guilt and shame that people carry, which is what I call the byproduct or legacy of it. And some people just think it's not worth talking about. They just want to move on. When you start peeling back the layers of it, there are often people in power who don't want to give up their power, or they don't want the threat of losing their power. So there's a number of different reasons why people don't want to talk about it. But guilt and shame and ignorance, to me, have been reasons that always arise to the top when you bring people together. Talking about race is hard. 80% of millennials would rather not discuss it. A majority of white and black adults say they're uncomfortable broaching the subject with someone of another race. So how can people examine something that preeminates nearly every aspect of American life? And the reason I chose those two questions is kind of what I'm going to hit today, but also this bottom part where it says every aspect of American life. That's another thing I'm going to hit really hard on, because I do not think that race should be a big thing in everyone's life in America. I will touch on that a little bit more, but when you see a situation happening, you first should not see it be black versus white, whatever the situation is. It, just because of the way they're dressed, you shouldn't judge by, street versus a country boy or something. It should not just be those two things that instantly go into your head. And I think that's actually one of the problems that we have. So that's why I wanted to talk about this touchy subject. And the next article is literally called The Touchy Subject of Race. Ken Smith talks about it. Now, that debate moderators are asking presidential candidates how race works in their lives. I've been thinking about things I've witnessed here in the northern Indiana. A couple of years ago, I was visiting an elderly man from the neighborhood on one of those March days when the air is earthy and hopeful. We said our goodbyes on his front step just as a nearby junior high school let out the kids and they started walking home. They were happy, relaxed, holding conversations of their own choosing now, not serpentous ones etched out in whispers under the gaze of a pedagogical elder. These kids were free at last. I didn't know him really well since he lived in the next block, but I remember our neighbor as a friendly person, always ready to be kind, or always be ready with a kind word for our kids as they grew up. But he was sort of hung up about race. Whenever he told a story, if it involved white people, he never said they were white. But if it involved a black person in the story, he always said the person was black, even if it wasn't meaningful to the part of the story. I guess he was raised in a place where people just did that. He might say, I took the car to Wilson's shop for new brakes. If Wilson was white, that's what he would say. But if the guy installing the new brakes had darker skin, our elder neighbor would have to mention race. To him, a person was either a person or a black person. On that afternoon, he pointed out something about the junior high kids going past that really annoyed him, I could tell. Notice how all the black kids walk in the middle of the street, he said. These kids were raised so badly, he said scornfully, they don't even know to walk on the sidewalk, or else they would just be so disrespectful of what is proper in life that they don't even the simplest right thing. That was his second explanation. I had noticed the kids walking down the street too, but I had a different idea about it. My theory was, if you're a teenager passing the house of an easily frightened elderly white people, the further you stay away from the front of their house, the better. Walking down the middle of the street might mean fewer scared folks peeking from behind their front curtains and reaching for their phones to call 911. That's my guess. And I guess our neighborhood was raised in an isolated social setting where simmering racial attitudes were never challenged and erased by a richer, more gratifying set of personal relationships with people of all sorts. I remember, too, a presidential candidate from the 1980s, Senator Bill Bradley of New Jersey, who asked Americans whether we all too often accept that kind of social isolation and the attitude it nurtures of uncertainty and even fear about another person. It's a shame to think of our elderly neighbor simmering away in a fearful anger isolation. I drove across town last year on side streets and happened upon an encounter between a white female police officer and a young African-American man. They were standing near the street on the lawn of somebody's house as I drove slowly by. The officer, alone, a few feet from her squad car, was plainly nervous and physically agitated as she asked the young man some questions. Behind him stood an arc of neighbors, no fewer than a dozen people, I'd say, who had come out of their houses to watch. They all looked much more like the young man than the white police officer. They had a job to do, which was to stand as witness. I saw in their quiet gravity that they knew that witnesses sometimes keep things from escalating. Seeing so many people standing there, even in the 20 seconds it took to drive past, I felt certain that they must do this over and over again in that neighborhood in order to try to keep their young people out of jail or out of the morgue. I imagine that the more any of us are witnessed and known personally and understood by others, the better. Isn't that the best hope we have of someday seeing the world race lose its grim importance on American lives? And I'm going to hit some points on that one as well, but that was one of my main arguments that me and my friend were talking about at work. He was telling me, you know, if you're raised to think this one way, like let's use the old guy in this situation. And he was raised his whole life to think that one way. And then we have this, what was his name? Ken Smith, I think. Yeah. We have Ken Smith here writing about how he was trying to see both sides. I think that's our biggest problem. No one sees both sides. It's kind of like when I read this article about this guy. He was going to the bank and he's driving a nice car. And it was a Caucasian male. And as he's walking into the bank, a bank that he's with another person who was an African-American male, is coming out, looks at him, get out of his car, and says, white privileged. And he pulled the African-American aside, had a conversation with him, and they talked just like old buds after that, because what the African-American didn't understand is daddy didn't buy him his car. He didn't get his car because he works at some fancy thing. No, he saved for it and worked for it. And after they talked about it, they become really good friends. And I believe at the end of the article, he even stated that they're like workout buddies now. And I think that's what gets me the most is when it says this touchy subject of race that Ken wrote, he's talking about these teenagers walking in the middle of the street and talking about how they're raised wrong because of the color of their skin and they can't walk on the sidewalk. Now I get it, that's a later generation, but why would we see that still in our newer generation? I also read somewhere that a college university did a study that the generation, my generation and the generation after, are seeing less and less color. That's perfectly fine with me because I don't see color. But what really bothers me is how everyone else in the world does. When we put a situation up, and it happens to be a Caucasian and an African-American, we don't call them that. We instantly go to the straight, it's black this, it's white that, it's white this, it's black that. And I don't like that. I don't see anyone for the color of their skin. To be honest, before I even noticed the color of anyone's skin, whether it be white, black, brown, I mean, whatever it is, I want to say orange too. I don't know. They have so many racial terms anymore. It's ridiculous. But whatever the color is, I don't even notice that. You know what I notice most about a person is how they stand, how they walk up to me, their words when they first talk to me. Those is what I notice more because I am more of a, I want to open up and adapt to everyone possible. I have grown up with people that would be considered more street, more grimy, whatever you want to call them. And I've also grew up with some of the, I want to say the term prestigious or more uppity. And I can get along with everyone. But that's because I have to read your mannerisms first. It's kind of like my boss when he first showed up, this poor guy. He walked right up and he's working up in Maine. It's his very first day. And everyone's already talking about how I know the system there. I have done very well at my job in breaking down every step in the easiest form possible to not only be easier to teach people, but also to make my job a lot easier. And the very first thing he knows is he thinks I'm this dude that's going to be like kind of like his right-hand man. And I didn't know people were talking about me that way, but the very first thing I said to this guy, because I could tell by his mannerisms that he's kind of a laid-back guy, I walked right up to him. I said, "So am I fired yet?" And he goes, "Excuse me?" I said, "I thought they hired you to fire me. Am I not losing my job?" And he just kind of gave me this dirty look. And I was like, "Dude, I'm just messing with you. Hi, I'm Rich. And to be honest, me and him are good buds now. Really good friends. He's a great dude. But literally just me reading that he's kind of that laid back guy. He's a very humble person. I read that on him too, that he does not want to boast about what he has. He wants nice things. I mean, don't we all? But he never sits there and brags about it or boasts about what he has. He's a down-to-earth person. So with all that being said, me and him clicked and became good friends. But it's because I read that he is that laid-back person. He is that humble, down-to-earth guy. He, you know, dressed with a sort of professionalism that made me also trust him. I've noticed those things before I put anything else into perspective. If you come into, so you all know I work as a security guard. I would rather not give out the company's name because I do not speak for the company, but I'm a security guard. There is a level of professionalism we have to hold where it's not crazy, but you know, we have to wear the black uniform pants of a, you know, extra of the cargo pants and stuff like that. We have to wear all black shoes. We have to wear our uniform t-shirt. And we have to be somewhat, the site that we're at is different, but we got to be somewhat cleaned up. We can't just, you know, do this and that. When people come in and we tell them their uniform and they dress that way for the full week, after that full week, I really start to notice who they are. And I start focusing on the little things. So that first week, they're going to be pristine. They're going to look great. They got to keep this job, right? But after that first week, you see certain people slack. And when you see them slack on certain things, you can really judge a person. All the way from simple as not tucking in their shirt, showing already a degrade level lower of professionalism, maybe sagging their pants, maybe, you know, trying to do a little bit too much of individualizing when it comes to their uniform, you can really read people. So my uniform, when I go in, tucked in, dressed up, I want to look as professional as possible. I don't care who's walking in that building. I want them to see me as authority. Not in the sense of I am authority, but in the sense of I'm respected. And tons of people there always direct people toward me, the customers toward me, because I do. I give off that presence. I try to help out. And then I look good doing it. But I am an individual. I love individuality. I love creativity. So we do have safety vests. And in the safety sense, my ribbons that are reflectors are not different. I got to keep those. That's for safety. That has nothing to do with anything else except for to keep my life safe. But I have little rivets, tassels, buttons, pins, everywhere else on my vest to show my individuality. But I'm still professional and safe. So it's little things like that that I also notice too, and I hope people notice on me, and that's why they approach me. It's this guy dressed up, dressed perfect in uniform, standing prestige, looking great. but he's kind of an individual. Let's pick his brain a little bit. I noticed those things, every single bit of it, before I even notice if you're African-American, Caucasian, Asian, Hispanic. I don't care about those types of things. Your background does not matter to me. What matters to me is you are as a person. And that's why I hate that at the end of this one, or not at the end of this one, at the end of the last one, it said, how can people examine something that permeates nearly every aspect of American life? That's the problem. We're pointing it out. We're influencing it. All the way from our music to our media, you constantly are hearing black versus white, or gangster versus cops, or, you know, this and that. And it's not like that. There should only be one race that matters. And I know this is going to sound corny as shit, but it's the American race. I mean, literally, we are one species. And we are the only species that has this type of communication and consciousness and morals than any other animal out there. Most of them react on instinct before anything else. Most of them, you know, are doing this and that because it's in their nature. But us as the human race can change ourselves at any time. We can literally make these differences. But the influence in our lives do not allow that. The music doesn't allow that. The news doesn't allow that. I mean, hell, I ain't gonna lie to you guys. We still have a two-party electoral system, and that should not be a thing. Those should be broken up. It should not be separated between left wing and right wing. That's separation of the union and of the human race within America of our own. And this is how I see things. This is why I don't choose a side. This is why I sit there and voice my opinion on either or. And listening to me, you might think I'm this way or that way, depending on my opinions. But you don't know me as a person. You haven't come and talked to me directly. So how can you make those assumptions? We'll go over some more of that. Next, we'll be talking about more of the Minneapolis issues. Four officers fired after black man, there it goes again in the media, thrown out there. Black man dies in Minneapolis, police custody, and video shows an officer kneeling on his neck. This was written by Amy Forletti. Minneapolis, a black man has died in police custody from a bystander showing a white officer kneeling on his neck during the arrest. Minneapolis Mayor Jacob Frey said Tuesday that the four responding officers involved in the incident had been fired and identified the victim as George Floyd. Frey announced the dismissal on Twitter, saying it was the right call, or this is the right call. Sorry, that's a quote. Floyd's death Monday night after the struggle with an officer is under investigation by the FBI and state agencies. The incident drew comparison to the case of Eric Garner, an armed black New York man who died in 2014 after he was placed in a chokehold by a police officer and pleaded for his life, saying he couldn't breathe. Prior to the firings, Frey apologized Tuesday to the black community in a post on Facebook stating, "Being black in America should not be a death sentence. For 5 minutes, we watched a white officer press his knee into a black man's neck. 5 minutes. When you hear someone calling for help, you're supposed to help. The officer failed in the most basic human sense," Frey posted. Minneapolis police said Floyd matched the description of his subject in a forgery case and resisted arrest. The video shows an unidentified officer kneeling on his neck and ignoring his pleas of, "Please, please, please, I can't breathe. Please, ma'am," Floyd is heard telling the officer. After several minutes, One of the officers tells Floyd to relax. "Man, I can't breathe," he responds. Minutes pass and the man becomes motionless under the officer's restraint. The officer leaves his knee on Floyd's neck for several minutes more. Several witnesses had gathered on a nearby sidewalk with some recording on their phones. Bystanders became increasingly agitated as Floyd pleaded with the police. One bystander tells officers that they need to let him breathe. Another yelled at the officer to check the man's pulse. Minneapolis Police Chief Maliari Arrondondo, speaking to reporters Tuesday, was asked about the use of the knee on the man's neck during the arrest. "We clearly have policies in place regarding placing someone under control," Arrondondo said, explaining that those policies will be part of the full investigation we do intently. The New York City officer in the Garner case said he was using a legal maneuver called the seatbelt to bring down Garner, whom police said had been resisting arrest, but the medical examiner referred to it as a chokehold in the autopsy report and said it contributed to his death. Chokehold maneuvers are banned in New York City police policy. In Minneapolis, kneeling on a suspect's neck is allowed under the department use of force policies for officers who have received training in how to compress the neck without applying direct pressure to the airway. It is considered a non-deadly force option according to the department policy handbook. I want to read this again to you because when I read this, it really stuck with me on something. And I will definitely make my points in the end. I am not going to sit here and choose either side. I want to explain myself in a very fact-pointing way. In Minneapolis, kneeling on a suspect's neck is allowed under the department use of force policy for officers who have received training in how to compress the neck without applying direct pressure to the airway. It is considered a non-deadly force option according to the department police handbook. A chokehold is considered a deadly force option and involves someone obstructing the airway according to the department's use of force policy. Officers are to only an amount of force necessary that would be objectively reasonable. Messages left with police officers' union were not immediately returned. Nakima Levy Armstrong, a prominent local activist, said watching the footage that was shared on social media made her sick to her stomach, and she said it reminded her of the Garner case, she told Star Tribune. A grand jury later decided against indicting the officers involved in the Garner's death, sparking protests around the country. Floyd's death in Minneapolis also came amid outrage over the death of Ahmaud Arbery, who was fatally shot on February 23rd, when a white father and son pursued a 25-year-old black man after spotting him running in the subdivision more than 2 months passed before charges were brought. Officers in Minneapolis were called about 8 p.m. Monday to investigate the report of a forgery at a business. According to the police spokesman John Elder, police found Floyd believed to be in his 40s and matching the suspect's description in his car. He was ordered to step from his car, and after he got out, he physically resisted officers, Elder said in the statement. Officers were unable to get the suspect into handcuffs and noted he appeared to be suffering medical distress. Floyd was taken by an ambulance to the hospital where he soon died. Police said cause of death is expected to be released by the medical examiner. All body camera footage has been turned over to the Minnesota Bureau of Criminal Apprehensive and the agency asked to speak with anyone who saw the arrest recorded video. The officers were initially put on paid administrative leave per department protocol. The agency said the officers' names will be released after interviews with the people involved and witness. The FBI is conducting a separate federal civil rights investigation at the request of the Minnesota police. The BCA said messages left with the FBI were not immediately returned. Violent protest, fires, looting, anger erupted in Minneapolis after George Floyd's death. What we know, soldiers stop active shooting, save countless lives by striking him with a car. Police said can't find Clorox wipes. Here's what... Oh, never mind. That was... I just literally started to read an advertisement. Sorry about that. Police in Minneapolis have come under the microscope in the recent years for deadly run-ins with citizens. A 24-year-old black man, Jamal Clark, was shot in the head and died in 2015 after a confrontation with two white officers responding to a reported assault. A county prosecutor declined to prosecute the officer, saying Clark was struggling for one of the officer's gun when he shot. The white woman, Justine Rizek Damon, died in 2017 when she was shot in the stomach by a Minneapolis officer responding to a 911 call. That officer, who is black, was convicted of manslaughter and murder and is serving 12 years in prison. So, what I'm mainly wanting to go over is legality and not legality and how I see all this. Once we get the medical examiner's report back and it says that officer killed Floyd, or that Floyd died in the act of crushing of a windpipe or something, maybe like a heart attack due to stress, I believe that that cop should be put in jail for murder. With that being said, I do not want to completely get mad at the cop as well. Here's why. It's said there in that paragraph I read twice that this was 100% legal according to Minneapolis. I 100% want to say that that's not considered a deadly force in their eyes, not my eyes. But obviously, in my opinion, I don't think you're supposed to detain the person by the neck for as long as he did. This is why I think that it should be considered murder and how the cops should be arrested for murder. But let's say the autopsy comes back, and I doubt this, so do not attack me or get upset with the words I'm about to say. But let's say the autopsy came back with drugs in his system. And let's say it's something that's very hard for police to take down, like meth, PCP, and other types of drugs. In that case, on those certain types of drugs, it has taken a lot more force to bring someone down. I do not want to say that George Floyd was on either one of those. I do not know him. I do not know his family. So again, this is just a personal opinion. If it came up to be that one of those was in his system and that is what caused him to take that force and keep driving it because he was afraid of being flipped and attacked by this individual, then that one is going to be up on the judge on if he gets charged with murder, manslaughter, anything like that. And I understand a lot of people are really upset right now because this is taken on the last case, as I just mentioned in that article, 2 months before something happened to those people. But one thing I don't understand is why are we rioting right now? Why are we destroying our own community for a situation like this? If you want me to be honest, it has nothing to do with the cops. Has nothing to do with the fire department. I have to throw them out there because I was reading an article about how these fire departments were responding to fires of the riots and trying to take it out, and people were throwing rocks and other chunks at the fire department. Like, come on, guys. They had nothing to do with this Floyd situation, and they're trying to make sure your whole home, Let's go with that. Your whole home doesn't burn down. Come on. But with that aside, okay, I don't even think it's their fault. I literally think that obviously the training that they're used to, this is obviously a deadly force. This is obviously going to have to be amended, which it will. They'll get rid of it. They will not allow it no more, just like they won't allow the chokehold. That's perfectly fine with me. But what I really don't understand is why is the judicial system taking forever to call on these cases? I get it. In this guy's case, 3 days while the medical examiner is examining Floyd to find out what really made him pass away. The judge gets that and the judge gets the video evidence. Let's lock these people up. If it's straight up murder, according to the judge, let's lock him up. But the one thing I want to mention to people, and this is me seeing both sides because I have to. I cannot look at any situation and be like, oh, it's this person's fault, that person's fault. I got to look at both ends. So I almost think there's a fear on both sides. And I can't tell you for a fact if Floyd resisted or not. But let's say he did. This is where I get very irritated with the hype of the media and the hype of everything else going on and why people act this way. And it all comes down to influence. So let's say he did resist. He didn't break the law. He didn't forge nothing. And a white male's approaching him, if you're using that. But a cop, let's go with that. I don't even care if it's black or white. No matter who the cop is, a cop is approaching him, right? In an authoritative stance, because most police officers want to keep that stance to keep the situation. And he's seen, especially in Minneapolis, I mean, you just heard me read about cops versus the black in this situation. And since he's an African-American male, he's now already potentially afraid. So let's say that he does resist arrest. You know, not only that, they're doing an investigation and they think they have the guy. They should not have used this much force unless he did resist. So that's another thing I need to get evidence on. But let's say he does resist. Now it's the fact of everything's going in his head that I could be the next African-American that dies due to a cop. So now I'm going to take it to serious force. The cop's thinking, if this is what happened, again, I don't know if he resisted or not, but if he resisted, the cop's thinking, oh, great. I have an African-American attacking me. We've had issues a couple years ago with the blacks versus blue. I don't know if you heard about that, but it was African-Americans against police force. So that could be in his mind. Now it's instantly we're both on a fear rage of what's going to happen. Obviously, the cop's going to win. Not saying anything to any citizen out there saying that you can't win. But what I'm stating is the cop has the most recent training out of these two in this situation. He's going to take him down. He's going to detain him. To be in the one defense, he did this according to his training and according to what's legal. What I think was, especially when I read that he went motionless and the cop still didn't get up, that was a problem. That is, if he had his leg, which I think he had his knee in the wrong area, that's why Floyd got hurt. Because there's an opening between your foot and your knee that you can lay down, and the opening is right there where your shin is. You can pin someone on that, sit on their back. They're pinned and you are not crushing their windpipe at all. He obviously had his knee on his jaw or in his neck area. And that could be why this happened the way it happened. But with that being said, he's going through training, going through everything that is legal, jumps into position, holds the guy down. Where he is in the wrong, and the reason I think that it could be murder, especially if this is the cause of death for Floyd, would be when Floyd goes motionless, he doesn't get up. Any animal instinct, once your victim is not moving anymore, you have won. So I know a lot in the animal community, there is a lot of male on male, and it's kind of in a sexual sense. And once the other one gives up, then that means the other one claimed dominance. Or if it's not in a sexual sense, it's in a fighting sense. Once the other one stops moving, the fight is over. Doesn't mean you killed the other one. It means the fight's over. You've dominated. This guy went through animal instinct, went way past animal instinct, and held that guy there under his knee with no threat at all. That is why I think it could be considered murder. If he's not the cause of death, and it has something else to do, and he followed all legal precedents when it comes to Minneapolis, I expect more riots, but I could see him going free. And none of this is to disrespect Floyd and his family. None of this is to disrespect anyone in Minneapolis. None of this is to disrespect anybody. I'm just pointing out the facts all the way around and how I would see it. Now, again, I don't know why people are rioting in Minneapolis. We have businesses all around claiming bankruptcy and going down because of this pandemic. And you're going to go and, as soon as a situation happens, go and riot those places and destroy our community and destroy your economic state? I mean, it just doesn't make sense to me. I get it that this person died. I get it, and it's a bad way. And I get 100% that the family needs justice. Especially if he died due to the fact of that person's actions. I understand that completely, because if this was my family, I would be livid. I'm a very family-oriented person. Only time I push anything aside when it comes to that is if you do it to yourself. He didn't do nothing to himself on there. He was completely innocent. But what I do want society to see is we need to stop with this black versus white, these citizens versus cops, these, I don't even get, country versus gangster, whatever you want to call it. This all needs to stop, and we need to just be one American human race. I don't see it. I don't understand color anymore. I don't understand how we classify people because of this and because of that. You should classify them by their personality. I mean, isn't that even, I know this is going to sound cheesy as shit, but isn't that even what movies are telling us? How many people here have seen a rom-com and the dude looks goofy or the woman's not the hottest in the world or something, but they come together because of their personalities? Why can't we do that with every basic human instinct? I get it. We need police out there. We need regulation. Because there's going to be criminals. Whether there's police or not, there's going to be criminals. People are still going to steal. People are still going to fight. People are still going to do things they're not supposed to do. But we need to separate this attitude towards all of it. A buddy of mine, actually I have a couple, are cops. And one of my buddies told me that he had to get out of the force because he was making judgment calls the wrong way. He said there has been 4 times exactly where he should have called it this way, and he didn't do it because he cared too much for humanity, and someone else got hurt from it. It's hard to live with that stress and those high point emotions when you don't know what's going on. I mean, and I'm not saying it's all innocent, but now let's pin you in that high stress environment where you now have to choose between life and death, between someone pointing a gun at you. But let's also throw that with everyone hating you and going to call you the worst names and try to bring you out of your job when you shoot that person just because of race? What? You already now have everyone attacking you on all ends, plus the person you're watching, and you have to make a judgment call and afraid to make that call? Look, I'm not trying to get sympathy for cops, and I'm not trying to sit here and fight for them. What I'm trying to point out is the differences that we all live by. You know, someone, and this is not attacking anyone named that, but someone named Becky, right? The worst thing in her world is that Connor broke up with her. What? That's the worst thing in the world for you? And you're ready to die for it? How about instead, let's make every person that you meet already put you on a death list and want to kill you? Now let's see how your life turns out. Oh, and you still think you're doing good? What about people plotting behind your back? And everything that you have now is lost today. Boom, gone. I mean, just imagine that for a second. Imagine how you would feel. And you're literally afraid to do something like your job because you see an African American, a Hispanic American, an Asian American. Because it has nothing to do anymore with this and that. It's going to be bad publicity because you attack someone that was not of the same race. Stop it, people. Why do we see that? Why do we see color? Why do we see race? We're all human. Why can't we see that? Or why can't we call it proper? Why is it when I read these things, as I'm going through the middle of them, everything says black versus white and white versus black, but none of them say Caucasian or African American? Sometimes political correctness should be in the right. I never once look at anyone for who they are by their race. And I think this is why I get along so well with so many different people. And also why I think like racist jokes are funny or racial stereotypical things are funny. Because I know that one person that isn't. And it's funny. It's enjoyable. Like, all white people like mac and cheese. Oh, really, Johnny, don't. That's what I'm trying to state is we need to stop seeing all this color, this black, white, this whatever. Why can't we just be one? That's why I think that this is such a touchy subject. Because instead of people wanting to discuss it like I am on here, I can discuss it to you all day. But instead of people wanting to discuss it, they want to attack each other on it. I made a statement before where I was talking about, it was on one of my podcasts, if you're an active listener, you've heard it before, but about, you know, how I was saying us when I was talking about older immigrants, the white people when they came over. I kept saying us, and I was like, I'm not incorporating myself in there. And then I thought about it. I was like, wow, I was including myself because I was white. I didn't mean it like that. I meant it as an immigrant, but it could be taken that way. And I never thought of it that way. I never once thought of it that way until I really broke it down and was breaking it down while reading this kind of stuff. I don't get why we have to create these separating things. Why can't we all just be one together? Lastly, I'm going to read this article. It's called "We Must Restore Peace: Minneapolis Burns During Second Night of Protest Over George Floyd's Death." Just a little bit more evidence. I will be leaving my Discord and other information in here. Please give me your opinions. I really want to listen to everything you all have to say. Again, I'm not attacking anyone in this segment. I'm not trying to disrespect no one. I know one person is probably going to send this, or one person might hear about it and send it to Floyd's family, and I want to let them know I definitely do not want to disrespect you. And I definitely do not want to sound like I am disrespecting or lowering the situation. This is a big situation. I absolutely get it. and you have my condolences. And I think you need justice. I'm just pointing out both sides of a coin. So please, my fans, my family, my friends, don't just get upset and disrespect me for what I say here. Take it into heart and really think about it. Minneapolis. Parts of South are unrecognizable. Thursday morning, as the damage stretched for miles following the second night of violent protest over the death of George Floyd. In response to the wreckage, city leaders call for peace while acknowledging the anger and pain in the community after the death of a black man who was pinned under the knee of a white police officer. Again, I don't like how we're using those terms. With tears in his eyes, Major Jacob Frey spoke to reporters late Thursday morning, announcing that there will be an all-out effort to restore peace and security in the coming days. Police Chief Mardrian Arandondo said that faith and community leaders will be on streets to help keep the peace as more demonstrations are planned for Thursday night. I believe in Minneapolis. I love Minneapolis, the mayor said. I believe in our city. We must believe we can be better than we have been. We must restore the peace so that we can do this and work together. In a stirring moment at the noontime news conference, police, city council vice president Andrea Jenkins sang Amazing Grace, expressing condolences to Floyd's relatives. A black transgender woman, Jenkins said that the black community in Minneapolis has long felt like it had a knee pressed on its collective back. A knee, she said, that says black lives don't matter. While people have a right to a peaceful protest, she added, they have none to commit violence. Her words came as the city was just beginning to assess the damage after night of looting, fires, and chaos. The Minneapolis Fire Department says crews responded around 30 fires along the East Lake Street between Wednesday evening and early Thursday morning. Fire vehicles were hit with rocks and other projectiles, but no firefighters were hurt. Amid the violence Wednesday, one man was shot dead. When asked to confirm reports on whether he had been shot by the pawn shop owner, police spokesman John Elder said that was one of the theories. Investigators say a suspect is in custody, but gave few other details. Aside from the shooting, only minor injuries were reported amongst protesters and police, and the police chief said. The second night of protest started much like the first, with a peaceful demonstration Wednesday afternoon at the Powderhorn neighborhood intersection where Floyd was pinned down by the police officer. Like Tuesday night, violence broke out after protesters marched to the 3rd Precinct police station where they clashed with police and riot gear. Community leaders report that number of people causing trouble were not recognizable Minneapolitans, the police chief said. Over the next several hours, looters ransacked, vandalized, and burned numerous buildings in the blocks around the 3rd Precinct. Video captured people running out of Target and Cub Foods with their arms full of merchandise while fires shot up in various businesses, all the way from a Wendy's to an AutoZone, and some burned without fire crews even there to handle the battle. One fire at an under-construction apartment complex could be seen miles away. The blaze raised a plume of smoke over Minneapolis sky and was picked up on weather radar. James Goldsplitch, a veteran who lived across the site for nearly two decades, says he is now homeless and his apartment building was evacuated. "It doesn't make sense," he said. "If they want justice for whatever's going on, this, it can't happen." The destruction stretched into the uptown neighborhood about 3 miles from the 3rd Precinct, where damage marked the Apple Store, Thrust and Jewelers, and High Lake Liquors, as well as other businesses near the Calhoun Square. The owner of Thrust and Jewelers said hundreds of thousands of dollars of merchandise was stolen from the store. "The shop itself was totaled," he said. "Bullet holes appeared to be in the windows." Local activist Nakima Levy Armstrong says the city leaders have had years to change the city's police department, citing the shooting of Jamar Clark in 2015. "The situation has been combustible for quite a while," she said Thursday morning, adding, "What we see now is a huge symbol of frustration many people have with the police department." Protests also happened in other U.S. cities. In California, hundreds of people blocked the Los Angeles freeway and shattered windows of patrol cruisers across the Mississippi River. In St. Paul, unrest was seen at the Midway neighborhood Target store. The anger and frustration over Floyd's death were sparked by cell phone footage and his Memorial Day encounter with the police. The 9-minute video posted online showed a white police officer pushing his knee into Floyd's neck as he repeatedly told police, "I can't breathe." Floyd, 46, was pronounced dead at the hospital shortly thereafter. Police had been called into an intersection of Chicago Avenue and East 38th Street on a report of someone trying to use a forged document at Cup Foods. Floyd resisted arrest, police said, and had a medical incident. However, video obtained by the CBS News contradicts that, showing Floyd cooperating with officers, at least in the initial moments of the encounter. So that's another thing. If he wasn't resisting, I do think the guy should be charged with murder. But we're going to go back to reading. On Tuesday, all four officers involved in Floyd's arrest, Derek Chauvin, Thomas Lane, Tua Thao, and J. Alexander Kuig, were fired. The next day, the mayor of Minneapolis called for the officer who put his knee on Floyd's neck to be criminally charged, and the charging decision is now in the hands of the Hennepin County Authority, Mike Freeman. The U.S. District Attorney and FBI in Minneapolis are currently conducting a robust criminal investigation into Floyd's death. The Department of Justice has made an investigation a top priority and has assigned experienced prosecutors of the FBI criminal investigation to the matter, a joint statement said Thursday. Anticipating under the night of violence, a number of businesses in the Twin Cities have announced closures. Metro Transit says the buses and light rail trains won't run after 4 p.m. The U.S. Postal Service also announced that it will not be suspending service at select Minneapolis, or it will be, I'm sorry, suspend service at selected Minneapolis locations. Ben Crump, the attorney representing Floyd's family, released a statement for the relatives Thursday saying that while the family is thankful for the protests, for standing with them, looting and violence distracted from the strength of our collective voice. A family is urging city leaders to the police department to look at the culture they've created and ask the hard questions. So actually, I was just, you know, saying how much I didn't get to read all these thoroughly. So reading these again made this a lot easier to do this type of podcast. I really appreciate Floyd's family even more now. So even though I mentioned just in that last segment, I don't want them to think I'm disrespecting them in any way, and I hope that they appreciate everything I'm saying, I really appreciate that they said that doing this violence is not the key. That's some high respect. Now, I'm not saying that I disrespect anything that they think, but what I was saying was protesters were standing with them. Looting and violence distracted them from the strength of their collective voice. I think that's a strong statement for, especially for someone who lost a family member. You know, I mean, there's some people out there, I know I'd almost want to, because again, I'm, like I said, I'm a very strong family person, but like, you almost want for people to stand up and show this and show that, but it's like, it's very respectful to be like, you know what, it's a good thing they didn't tear down the whole city. Or it's very respectful to say, why are y'all tearing down the whole city? Don't be that way. So that's really big. Thank you, guys. I appreciate that you are also trying to be a part of, look, we are going to make a difference in this. We do not have to act out like this. And I don't think we ever should. I don't think human beings should have to act like this to get our voices to be heard. So I very much appreciate that even more. But I think what it amounts to is, tired of the black versus white, or seeing the color, period. I'm tired of the hyping it up when it comes to the media, but also when it comes to social media. I don't know how many people on here follow me on Instagram, but I went off on a couple people, and it's just the dumb things that they said. I literally hashtag stupid people something. So someone posted a post that had the guy that was pushing his knee on George Floyd's neck, head, back, whatever he was crushing. Again, rest in peace, buddy. But they said they found a picture of that guy, which I don't know if it's real or not. Hopefully they can tell us if it's real or not. But they had a picture of the guy, and he's wearing a Make America Great Again hat. And this person instantly wanted to blame Trump for this, saying that this is the world that Trump has created. First off, this has nothing to do with politics. I don't care who you are. This was not a political thing. But they want to bring up and say, look, Trump, this is what you're doing. You're separating our community. Everything that the hip-hop community has brought together, you're tearing it down. And that pissed me off more than any other statement I think I've ever had in my life. Because of the fact, not only did they bring politics in it, which this is a whole separate incident. That dude did not just kill Floyd because he's a Trump supporter. Okay? I don't know if I support Trump. I don't know if I don't like Trump yet. I don't think he's done much to make me sway either way. But I tell you what, I'm not going to say that he's the one that caused this person to murder another person, if that's the case. If this does lead to Floyd's death, I hope the judge gets him for murder and puts him in jail for years to come. And if this did not lead to Floyd's death, I want the judge to really look into it on, well, did he make the right decision or not? And still throw him in jail. I understand. This guy should definitely come to justice if we can rule it as being murder. But with that aside, dang it, I kind of just forgot where I was going. Oh, what really pissed me off about that statement even more is they said, look, Trump, you're separating the community that the hip-hop community brought together. First off, what I want to go over about the hip-hop community, which, FYI, when I was younger, I used to write my own lyrics, and I used to try to produce here and there. And yes, I was the typical rapper, rapping about the same thing everyone does. But you're going to tell me that the hip-hop community, the popping cap in someone else's ass, the 223s and AKs, the gangster lifestyle, bra-ka-ka-ka-ka, and the fuck the police is the community that brought everyone together when it came to people and police officers? I mean, literally, in the rap game, the best thing you can do, and I did it because I wrote it down myself and I was in the game, kind of. I ain't known and I didn't get much produced, but I wrote my own stuff. But do you know what I mainly wrote about? Not only just about the regular shit that you hear. In the rap game, it's all about yourself. Literally, listen to the lyrics. 96% of rap is all about boasting about yourself or boasting about the people around you of either A, being the best, B, having the most money, C, getting the most girls, or D, doing the best drugs, or all of them in the same song. In the rap game, you boast about yourself. It has nothing to do about bringing people together. None of it. Only person you might be bringing together is your gang. So you can what? Say fuck the police or shoot up a coffee shop? Stop it, guys. I don't understand. How are you going to sit there and make that statement that our president, just because this one guy possibly wore a Trump hat, that our president is the cause for this situation, but the hip-hop community was bringing people together? What? That doesn't even make sense to me. It literally doesn't make sense to me. That's like me going, you know what? I think America would be more racist if we didn't have Dora the Explorer. She's really opened our eyes to Hispanics. No, that's a dumb statement. Shut up. Dora the Explorer is a great show to teach younger kids Spanish, which it's better to teach younger kids because younger kids are a sponge and absorb everything and absorb it into their mind to learn it. But it had nothing to do with rather we appreciate the Hispanics here in America. What? Might get you a little bit more experienced with their culture, but it doesn't just make me go, oh, I like them all 100% now. They're great. No, shut up. Again, I'm not attacking people. I'm attacking the situation of how stuff is dumb. You can't just make these statements. If someone goes outside and shouts Yeehaw Trump and runs around the house naked, okay, he might be doing that for Trump. That makes sense. You have a complete situation of forgery, a cop taking down a suspect, taking it too far, hashtag possibly murdering him, or hashtag murder him, hashtag guilty. But anyways, what I'm trying to say is what does that got to do with politics? That had nothing to do with politics. Hell, that's like saying that way back in the day, because we still had lynchings in America, that had to do with just the politics of it all. That's like saying that, oh man, I forgot her name. Oh man. I don't remember now, but she stabbed her husband. I know someone's going to hit me up and tell me her name. I want to say it was Catherine something. No, not Abby. I don't know. If you can, Discord me the name or hit me up on Twitter or whatever the name. But that girl that like stabbed her husband multiple times and he died or something, whatever. That's like saying that it's because the president, she did that. Not the fact that it could have been a domestic dispute and she snapped. Or the fact that she have always had killing tendencies and wanted to murder him. I mean, that had nothing to do with politics. What are you all talking about? That is what gets me the most, is when you say something so ignorant that it shouldn't have been involved. And then to bring up something that is completely opposite just made it even more stupid. Hip-hop community brought us together. Dude, in hip-hop, you're always boasting about yourself, shooting other people, getting with your gang, sleeping with this girl, doing that drug, and bam, making money. Had nothing to do with that situation. Quit bringing that stuff up. But that leads into a perfect transition of my last part I want to go over, and that is influence as a whole. Influence is the mob more than anything. Once you keep bringing it into the mob's mind, that is all that the mob thinks. And what I mean mob, I mean the group of individuals, a group of people that live in Kentucky, people that live in California, people that you put it in their mind, the mob's going to listen to it. And we influence black versus white, white versus black, white versus Hispanic, black versus Hispanic, Hispanic versus black, Hispanic versus illegal alien this, illegal alien that, gay marriage, terrorism. Stop. Quit throwing all these influences in my head and just give me the facts. Caucasian male, detaining a suspect, African American, potentially murdering him. Stay tuned. That is what I need to hear. I don't care that the person's black. I don't care that the person's white. I don't care that the situation is da-da-da-da-da. It doesn't matter. Did he murder him? Did he not? Was this legal? Was it not? Was it a true act of violence or an act of hatred? That one could be okay. But do not break it down in the simplicity of it. And then when people only see that one thing, that's all they want to fight for. And no one wants to look at the other side. And I think that's where our biggest problem is. And I hope we can get past that here in America and here as the human race, is we can get past the, oh, well, you know, he was just a racist white dude that caught the suspect. The suspect said one word to him that was wrong, so he murdered him. No. Let's see both sides. Let's talk about why this person did that or why that person did this. Let's break it down to what fears could be going on both of their minds. Let's talk about why it had to escalate. I mean, hell, he could have been sitting there on him, detaining him, thinking everything's okay. People start running up with cameras out and ready to record, and he just never got up after that. At that point, he's not thinking of the situation and pin him down. He's thinking, oh shit, my career's over. Now, the only reason why I did not bring that point up as a very valid point is for the mere fact that there was multiple cops involved in this arrest. Three other cops should have, once they had handcuffs on him, the three other cops should have told the public to please back up. And that guy should have got off Floyd's neck and put him in the cruiser and went from there with the investigation. Everything would have been done. No one would have had to die. No one would. And if you are recording an officer, let me go over something with you guys too. I'm not in the police force, but this is one thing I would do. If you are ever seeing a situation where a cop, let's say a cop pulls over someone, and you think, you know what, I'm just going to get out and I'm going to record. First off, you're going to agitate that cop. But if you want to record, stay a safe distance from the cop. Do not let that cop see you running up to be a witness or running up to throw it on social media, because that's going to piss him off more than anything, and that's going to scare him more than anything. Because the only thing he could think of at that point is, well, I lost my job, might as well, it doesn't matter anymore what I do, you know, whatever. And human instinct is, once you have nothing, you might as well just go crazy or snap. I know y'all have seen Snap before. You know, I'm not saying that is our only reaction, but I'm saying is that's a possibility. And I don't know how many recordings they have. I don't know how many people ran up with their cell phones. But let's say realistically it was about four people. There's four officers. Let's say four people are running up. They already have a suspect in hand, so one officer has to stay there with that suspect. That means now it's three taking on four, with more people coming up with cell phones or more people coming up with recorders. Look, if you have a cell phone and you're recording with it, if you take your two fingers and you pinch the center of the screen and you spread out, you can zoom in a lot. Pretty good amount. Depending on your phone, even more than mine can. But you can still zoom in a pretty good amount. And capture it that way, but stay from a safe distance. You do not want to scare the cops. You do not want the attention of the cops. And why would you get this to escalate? That is my reason on why I brought this up. There is no defense for it. I'm not saying that's what happened. I'm not saying, oh no, this cop was scared. He already figured everything was going done. I'm just going to hold this guy here until he quits moving. I'm not saying any of that. And the guy did go to the hospital and died at the hospital. But what I'm trying to state is to stay your safe distance. You ever get pulled over and you want to record the police? Don't put your phone in their face. put your phone on record, leave it in your passenger seat and record everything they say and record everything that they do. And if they physically touch you in an inappropriate way, then try to record them because then you have evidence. Other than that, just leave it facing up. Verbally from someone's mouth, you have enough evidence to do something. You do not have to be putting it in their face. And I think that's why people are getting agitated, why people are getting scared, and why we attack each other rather than respect each other. If you want me to talk more about some of my opinions on these types of subjects and other stuff like that, please let me know. Do not forget to let your friends and family know to check out my podcast. Don't forget to support my podcast. I have a support page, and if you support me, more will come. And do not forget to check out my Twitch stream at twitch.tv/JesseRidge. And guys, again, this is no disrespect on the Minnesota people, or Minneapolis people. This is no disrespect on all angles of what happened during this situation. And this is no me choosing one side. These are just some of my opinions on how I see us as a broad spectrum of the human race and things that I think that we could do better. I love you all. Later.